Welcome to the Counter Vortex with your ranter, Bill Weinberg, ranting at you in the wee hours of March 25th, 2024, as always from my apartment on Manhattan's Lower East Side, which fortunately is not under aerial bombardment, unlike Gaza, unlike Ukraine, and unlike several other places around the world. So, we've all heard, by this time, presumably, a group of armed men opened fire at a concert hall in a Moscow suburb on the night of Friday, March 22nd, killing at least 137 people by the current count and injuring scores more. Video footage posted online showed at least two masked men in camo entering the Crocus City Hall in Krasnogorsk, repeatedly firing assault rifles as they advance. Another graphic video appears to show four men firing into the crowd in the seating area before a fire breaks out. The crowd was waiting for the popular Russian rock band Picnic to take the stage. After a few minutes of shooting, a grenade or incendiary bomb was apparently thrown, and the venue was engulfed in flame. Footage published by the official TASS news agency showed a column of smoke billowing from the roof of the venue. Later that day, the Islamic State Khorasan province, or ISIS-K, Afghanistan affiliate of the ultra-fundamentalist movement, claimed responsibility for the attack in a post on the Telegram channel of the ISIS media arm, Amaq News Agency. The statement said ISIS-K attacked a large gathering of Christians in the city of Krasnogorsk on the outskirts of the Russian capital, Moscow, killing and wounding hundreds, quote-unquote. Not sure how many followers of the hard rock outfit Picnic are actually practicing Christians. Undeterred, Russian authorities are, of course, blaming the attack on Ukraine. The Federal Security Service, FSB, successor to the KGB, of course, announced the next day that four suspects had been detained in Bryansk, near the Ukrainian border, and said that they had been attempting to flee to Ukraine. Russian pro-war social media channels have been approvingly posting images of the suspects being tortured and even mutilated by the FSB, including grisly shots of one with his ear cut off. We linked to the to this image on a site called Russia Insider, but before you click on it, trigger warning. Russian Security Council Deputy Chair and former President Dmitry Medvedev, the regime's mouthpiece for the most bellicose verbiage, the stuff which is too extreme even for Putin, immediately took to Telegram saying, quote, "If it is established that these are terrorists of the Kyiv regime, all of them must be found and ruthlessly destroyed as terrorists," end quote. President Vladimir Putin himself shortly echoed this, saying, quote, "The perpetrators of the act of terror, all those who shot and killed people, were found and detained. They tried to hide and were moving in the direction of Ukraine, where, according to preliminary information, the Ukrainian side prepared a window for them to cross the border," end quote. Putin also pledged revenge. "We will definitely identify and punish everyone who was behind the terrorist attack," unquote. And Russian far-right oligarch Konstantin Malofiev called for a nuclear strike, quote, "Let's give the civilian population of Ukraine 48 hours to leave the cities and finally end this war with the victorious defeat of the enemy. using all forces and means. End quote. Malofeev wrote on Telegram. This Malofeev, by the way, apparently runs his own private paramilitary groups to fight in Ukraine. He's someone who bears closer scrutiny. Kyiv's foreign ministry responded to all of this in a statement saying, quote, "We consider such accusations to be a planned provocation by the Kremlin to further fuel anti-Ukrainian hysteria in Russian society, create conditions for increased mobilization of Russian citizens to participate in the criminal aggression against our country, and to discredit Ukraine in the eyes of the international community," end quote. But the intelligence directorate of the Ukrainian Defense Ministry, just as quickly and just as predictably, accused the Russian secret services of carrying out the attack. Quote, "The terrorist attack in Moscow was a planned and deliberate provocation by the Russian special services on Putin's orders," the intelligence directorate said in an official statement, adding that the aim was to further escalate and expand the war in Ukraine, quote unquote. The mysterious Freedom of Russia Legion, which the previous week had carried out cross-border raids from Ukrainian territory on Russia's Belgorod and Kursk oblasts, wasted no time in blaming the Kremlin as well, saying in a social media statement hours after the attack, quote, "We accuse Putin's terrorist regime of today's tragedy. We have faced similar manifestations of the Kremlin's dictatorship since the very first days of Putin's rule and are not surprised by yet another bloody provocation," end quote. Washington is backing up the notion of ISIS responsibility and denying a Ukrainian role in the attack. Interestingly, the U.S. had apparently warned Moscow of an impending attack just days earlier. U.S. National Security Council representative Adrian Watson told CBS News after the attack, quote, "Earlier this month, the U.S. government had information about a planned terrorist attack in Moscow, potentially targeting large gatherings to include concerts, which prompted the State Department to issue a public advisory to Americans in Russia. The U.S. government also shared this information with Russian authorities in accordance with its longstanding duty to warn policy," end quote. The security alert, dated March 7th, remains on the website of the U.S. Embassy in Russia. It reads, quote, "The embassy is monitoring reports that extremists have imminent plans to target large gatherings in Moscow to include concerts, and U.S. citizens should be advised to avoid large gatherings over the next 48 hours. End quote. Well, it took longer than 48 hours, but that's still rather prescient, isn't it? Yet security at the Crocus City Hall was so lax that masked and camo-clad militants bearing assault rifles could approach and enter the venue with no opposition. This inevitably raises the possibility of a lie-hop thesis. Followers of 9/11 conspiracy theory will be familiar with this acronym for Let It Happen on Purpose, as opposed to its more ambitious counterpart, Make It Happen on Purpose, or MIHOP. But Putin's response to the warnings at the time was to dismiss them as, quote, "provocative statements that resemble outright blackmail and the intention to intimidate and destabilize our society," end quote. This constitutes an insinuation, at least, that Washington was behind, or at least complicit in, the attack. Let's review the factors in support of or against these three theses: an ISIS attack, a Ukrainian covert operation, or a Russian false flag operation. or four if we include the insinuated theory of a U.S. hand in the attack. Is there anything that might make Picnic a special target for either side? In 2016, the band was barred from performing in Ukraine due to their having played a gig in annexed Crimea. However, the band does not seem to be particularly pro-war or pro-Putin. But then, ISIS presumably had no special beef with Ariana Grande in the Manchester concert bombing in 2017. Killing some 20 English youth seemed to have been sufficient motivation. Russia's military devastation of Afghanistan in the 1980s doubtless provides an extra incentive for ISIS-K. Plausible video footage of the attack released by ISIS March 24th appears to further substantiate the group's culpability. It is important to recall that Putin's rise to power, including his recent rise to outright autocratic power, as well as his various military adventures, have been lubricated every step of the way by terror attacks. The 1999 apartment block bombings in Moscow and two other Russian cities did for Putin what 9/11 did for Bush, igniting a new war with Chechnya, propelling the hardline Putin into the Kremlin, and similarly sparking a frenzy of conspiracy theories. The UK Independent on January 6, 2000, in the midst of Putin's second Chechnya war, claimed to have obtained a videotape on which a Russian military intelligence officer captured by the Chechens confesses, quote-unquote, that a Russian special services unit committed the Moscow apartment block bombings that ignited the war. On the video, shot by a Turkish journalist in Grozny, the Chechen capital, then in rebel hands, the captured Russian identifies himself as Alexei Galtin of the GRU, Russian military intelligence. The bearded captive acknowledges, as his own, papers displayed by the Chechen guerrillas, identifying him as a senior lieutenant, Armed Special Services, General Headquarters for the Special Forces of the Russian Federation, quote-unquote. On the video, Lieutenant Galtin said, quote, I did not take part in the explosions of the buildings in Moscow, but I have information about it. I know who is responsible for the bombings in Moscow. It is the FSB, in cooperation with the GRU, that is responsible for the explosions, end quote. He then listed other GRU officers by name. The Russian Ministry of Defense responded that it was checking whether there was such a GRU officer. Said one official, speaking to the Independent, quote, even if he exists, you understand what methods could have been used on him in captivity, end quote, which is certainly a valid point. Nearly 300 people died when the four apartment blocks were destroyed by terrorist bombs in September 1999. The attacks provoked Putin, appointed prime minister the month before, to launch his new war in Chechnya, and he was elected president in the midst of this war fever the following year. But there would be as much conspiracy theorizing about these bombings in Russia as there was just a little bit later about 9/11 here in the United States. And those conspiracy theories have been recalled in subsequent terror attacks in the Russian Federation. Certainly, a vicious cycle is at work. Blowback for the brutal Chechnya war was seen in the October 2002 deadly siege of a Moscow theater by Chechen militants, in which some 130 hostages were killed. September 2004 saw the deadly schoolhouse siege in Beslan in the North Caucasus Republic of North Ossetia, which resulted in the deaths of more than 330 people, the majority of them children. This attack was proudly claimed by Chechen rebel warlord Shamil Basayev, but it certainly well served Putin's quest for total power. In the wake of the Beslan attack, but the most notorious of several which took place in Russia during this period, Putin introduced new and sweeping counterterrorism measures. He also proposed that regional governors, such as those in North Ossetia and Chechnya, no longer be popularly elected, but instead be appointed by the president. This change, which was approved by overwhelming majorities in the Duma, the Russian parliament, returned Russia to the unitary system of government that had existed under the Soviet Union. Elections for regional governors were restored in response to pressure from below in 2012 by Medvedev during the period when he was rotated into the presidency as Putin's proxy to get around constitutional term limits. Putin, restored to the presidency later that same year, has recently been taking steps to rein in or remove recalcitrant governors and, as we all know, has pushed through a constitutional reform allowing him to stay in office indefinitely. Both moves part of his consolidating dictatorship. This was also given a boost by the twin suicide bombings targeting public transportation in Volgograd on December 29, 2013, seen as an effort to disrupt the upcoming Winter Olympics, which were slated for the Black Sea port of Sochi. Of course, the requisite conspiranoia about false flag attacks quickly emerged. The ever-predictable InfoWars of Alex Jones hyperventilated, quote, CIA's Chechen assets attack Russia ahead of Winter Olympics, end quote. In Russia, however, popular theorizing more targeted Putin himself rather than the American competition. And of course, it was the next year, 2014, that Putin illegally annexed Crimea. And since then, the Crimean Tatar people have seen their leaders and prominent community members charged and imprisoned after kangaroo court trials for terrorist associations, although even the Russian authorities have not been able to attribute any actual terrorist acts to them. They are being imprisoned merely for being members of Hizbut Tahrir, a completely above-board Islamic civic organization. And it is, of course, no surprise, to say the least, that Putin overwhelmingly won election to a fifth term as Russian president in the farcical and controlled elections that were just held 5 days before the Moscow attack, last Sunday, March 17th. And that's not counting. Five terms as president, not counting his one term as prime minister from 2008 to 2012, when Medvedev was his proxy president, so to speak, with the constitutional changes essentially allowing Putin to remain in power indefinitely. They won't have to resort to that subterfuge again. Which is why, who was actually behind the Crocus City Center attack does not really matter over much. Just as 9/11, whoever was behind it, served the hyper-interventionist aims of W. Bush and his administration, we may be reasonably certain that the carnage in Krasnogorsk will serve the war aims and totalitarian domestic agenda of Vladimir Putin. Indeed, on Sunday, March 24th, 2 days after the attack, Russia launched massive airstrikes on Kyiv and the whole of Ukraine, clear to the western city of Lviv, and millions were already without power in Ukraine due to airstrikes on electrical infrastructure, which had been carried out Friday, just hours before the Krasnogorsk attack, leaving several dead. Perhaps the still more apt analogy may prove to be the Reichstag fire, the February 1933 arson attack on Germany's parliament building, which led immediately and very rapidly to the establishment of the total dictatorship of Adolf Hitler. The lone wolf communist who was executed for the arson, Marinus van der Lubbe, was posthumously pardoned by the German state in 2008. But given everything that came next, does the question of his guilt or innocence make that much difference? We may be at another such historical tipping point now. Whatever happens next, we'll be watching closely. This has been Bill Weinberg with the Counter Vortex. Check us out online at countervortex.org, where everything I've been ranting about tonight is assiduously blogged up, hyperlinked, and documented. Please support us on Patreon. We really need your support to keep going. Patreon.com/countervortex. Just throw us a buck or two a week. Make a big difference. Join the Counter Vortex. Join the resistance. And rant on you next time.